Lach Malav Perta Zion Pasach of Dalad. Amri is now the unquestioned king for 12 years of Yisrael. He rules in Tirzah for 6 years, but in the meantime, by Yikan Esahar Shomron, he bought the mountain of Shomron. So he makes a purchase. He wants to strategically move the capital. Now, Tirzah, back in the days of Yehoshua, in Sefer Yehoshua Perek Yud Beis, we see was a central town in Canaan. And Yerovam adopted it as his capital, but it's not near the highways. It faces eastward towards the desert. Rabbi Alex Israel puts a little geography spin on it. It has no direct access to trade routes. It does not go anywhere near the sea. But Omri is looking for an alliance with Phoenicia and Plishti territory. Possibly, according to some historians, political, geopolitical writers, to resist pressure from Aram up above and eventually Ashur. So an alliance with other local non-Jewish nations is good for business. Being next to the Mediterranean Sea is good for business. Being next to trade routes is good for business. So his new capital, Shomron, Samaria, which is going to become the capital and stay that way until the fall of the Northern Kingdom some 100, 120 years later, is very close to the major north-south road that goes through all of Malchus Yisrael and located directly on an east-west road, an artery that goes straight through from the eastern border of Eretz Yisrael, going straight through until the Mediterranean, to the coast. So Samaria is a very wise choice of location for a capital city, and Omri did not conquer it, but bought it, Me'es Shemer, from a man named Shemer. And it's interesting that Omri is not going to rename the city after himself, which is what one would expect from an egotistical, might-makes-right sort of bully boy king, but rather continues to call it Shomron, the identity of Shemer, the original landowner who sold it to him. So a sefer called the Das Mikra says that this is a positive reflection upon Malchus Yisrael, because, and maybe it's a remembrance of Yerovam's tactics to be a man of the people, because rather than to seize it from the people and turn it into municipality through eminent domain, rather than to raise taxes to pay for it, Omri makes a private purchase, pays for it in full out of his treasury, and doesn't leave any citizens angry and vengeful over the loss of their land. Now compare that, Rabbi Israel says, to what's going to happen later with Omri's descendant, Ahav, who is going to try to take land next to his palace from a man named Navos, who was a distant kinsman. And the story of Navos HaYisraeli and his kerem and his vineyard, very, very important story in Sefer Melachim, and one that we've probably all heard before. That is an unrighteous seizure of land. Whereas, here, we do not have Omri doing the same. We have Omri making a purchase. Dare I say, the Nach does not compare him. I'm not trying to aggrandize Omri into something he's not. But think about, Lahavdil, Avraham Avinu buying Maras HaMachpelah from the Bnei Ches, and there being a contract and a deed and money that changes hands. That is a righteous purchase. That is a rightful purchase. And so Omri buying Shomron from Shemer follows in a great Jewish tradition of taking responsibility for one's estate and recognizing in some ways that the true master of the land is HaKadosh Baruch Hu and not people themselves. So Omri gets a lot of props in various mefarshim for doing it this way. B'chikrayim kasef. And he paid 2 kikar kasef, which we said in the days of Shlomo already, is quite a massive amount of gold, or silver in this case. It's 2 loaves of silver. So he's not kidding around when he pays this money. Vayiven Esahar, and he built up the mountain. Vayikra Shem Ha'ir Asher Bana, and the name of the city that he built, he called Al Shem Shemer. Just so that the pasuk makes it clear to us that we do not miscomprehend what it is that he's done. He calls it on the name of Shemer, Adonai Hahar Shomron, the original master, the original owner of the mountain of Shomron, of Samaria. So a lot of credit Omri is given for doing the right thing, commemorating the right thing, and handling it properly. But there's only so much credit that Omri can get for all of that, because Omri unfortunately follows in the footsteps of everybody who came before. His son Achav is going to take that to a whole new level, but we'll finish up with Omri next time in the traditional manner that we finish up with the kings of Yisrael, and then on to Achav ben Omri, who is going to take an extended period of time with us, because he is a unique individual. It's interesting that some of the great men, the righteous men, as in Shoftim, where we met a Shofate who ruled for 23 or 45 years, and he only gets two psukim, they get short shrift in the Nach. But the villains, the people from whom we can learn incredible lessons, like Achav ben Omri, oh, we're going to spend a lot of time with Achav. And Achav is also identified in Gemara Sanhedrin as one of those kings who lost his Olam Haba. And that is a rare, thank goodness, a rare Jew indeed, who is so wrong-headed and wrong-behaved that he loses his Olam Haba. That doesn't happen very often. And we're going to have to talk about what it was that Achav did, what he's all about, what he inherited from Omri perhaps, but how much he does on his own as we move forward.